Good morning to each one gathered out this morning. Greet you in the worthy name of Jesus, the one we just sang about that came to earth as a baby, and that's exciting. It's an exciting time of the year, and I was thinking about what I was going to preach this morning ahead of Christmas. And it occurred to me how many people talk about Christmas. And perhaps you, like me, have heard somebody say, "Are you ready for Christmas?" And while I think it's good, I think it's right to celebrate, I think it's right to have family gatherings, get together this time of the year, and talk about the Lord's birth, I believe it's more important that we think about His second coming, His coming again. And I thought about the fact this week as we heard about that 46-year-old, however old Barton Rister was, that was killed or died and then was in a wreck, how that... Were they ready for Christmas? In reality, it doesn't matter if you're ready for Christmas or not. It only matters if you're ready to meet the Lord. And Friday afternoon, I was called by another, my dad informed me that my uncle died a similar death. They think maybe he had a heart attack, ended up wrecking, and he died. He was 70. And it just, in my mind, I'm thinking, does it matter if you're ready for Christmas? No, it doesn't. But one thing does matter, and that is, are you ready to meet the Lord? Because Jesus is coming again, and that's what matters. And I thought about the words of Titus. Titus chapter 2, we have these words: "For the grace of God that bringeth salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that, denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. Why? Looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works." Are we looking for that second coming, for that blessed hope? And I was also reminded this week of the mercy of God, because you see, my uncle was 70. And I can remember him as a boy at home with my dad. I can remember him as a man that did not take his family to church. His wife took their family of five to church every Sunday. They would get past their house going to church. He never went along. He was a bitter man. I'm going to say perhaps he had a sick mind, and there's different categories you can put that. But he lived his entire life, and his children grew up under that influence. But his wife faithfully took him to church, and I'm told that every night before they went, she put the children to bed, that they prayed for their dad. And she prayed for her husband and prayed that someday he would be saved. And the children respected him. They all grew up, left home. They were all there. They're all faithful to this day. This man's wife died about 2 years ago of cancer. And about a year and a half ago, he started going to church. And earlier this year, he became a member. He became a member of the church. And now he died. I thought about the mercy of God that extended life to that man for more years than he deserved, than any of us deserve, but gave him time to get right with God. It's wonderful. God is merciful, but he does not promise us that mercy, that he will always give us time to repent. Well, for this morning, you can turn to Matthew chapter 2. I plan to preach lessons from the wise men. The story that we know, some by what's in the Bible, and some of it we understand by what we've been told in the songs we sang about we three kings of Orient are, and that's not all biblical, just so you know. It doesn't say how many men came. We're going to plan to read this story, and I plan to take some lessons from these wise men, and I'd like to turn it around at the end, last part of the message, and talk about the lessons we can take from this today in order to prepare us for the second coming, and prepare us maybe not for the second coming, but when we will meet him, because perhaps we'll be taken from this life like those two men were this week before Jesus came again. But their life here is over. Maybe we can learn some lessons from these wise men on that. Let's read Matthew chapter 2 at this time, 1 to 12. "Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him.' When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophets, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child, and when ye have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were coming to the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. Several things that I pondered as I read this story. Several points, maybe you could say. Lamar talked about meditating. Thinking about a story, and several things I thought about when I read this story. First of all, these men had a desire to worship the King of the Jews. These men had a desire for whatever country they were from. Recently, I went to the West. It took me a day to get there by planes, many miles away. These men, I'm not sure how many miles away they were, but apparently they had a desire to worship this king. And then I wonder, were these men Jews? What do you think? Were these men Jews? They were coming to worship the King of the Jews. Were they Jews? If they were, then it would kind of make sense that they had an interest in worshiping this King of the Jews, what they said he was. But if they weren't Jews, which I don't think they were, but doesn't say, did they somehow understand that this king was more than just King of the Jews? Apparently they understood that this king that was born was more than just King of the Jews, and that he was in fact king of the whole world and their king. And I don't understand how they knew that or what prompted them, but something inside them said, this is what we need to do. And they traveled this whole way. And of course, we have in Revelation 19, verse 16, that he is King of kings and Lord of lords. And apparently these men understood that, or I don't think they would have traveled that distance. The second thing I thought about, and that is, these men made a move, but that perhaps others didn't. Now, I know I'm reading between the lines a little bit, but do you think that these men that came were the only men, the only wise men? We think it was all the wise men that saw the star, they all came. Or do you think this was only a few of the wise men that saw the star and said, listen, we're gonna pick up and we're going to go. And this, some of these things, like I say, we could debate, and the Bible doesn't say, so we don't really know the answers to these questions. I don't really have the answers this morning. But something makes me think that perhaps there was more than just these men. If this star was in the sky, certainly more than just these couple of wise men noticed this star. Certainly it was something that was talked about in the land that they came from. Certainly they mentioned it to somebody. We have these wise men coming, and I don't have the picture in my mind, and maybe it's because of what Bible story books have done to me over the years and the songs we've sang, but I don't have the picture of 1,000 wise men coming. And yet I know when you read about the wise men back in Babylon, when they called all the wise men together to figure out dreams and whatever, that there was a large group came together. So I don't know how large this group was that came. But I wondered on these men that did come, whether they were the only ones that believed that it was important enough of a birth to come, because it was a baby. It wasn't a full-grown prominent individual, but it was a baby. Were they the only ones that understood? Were they the only ones that were financially able to make the journey? They were taking a certain amount of effort. Maybe they were the only one physically fit. Or were they actually the only ones who were willing to lay down everything else that they had gone and make it priority to go see the king? Of course, we don't know the answers to all those questions. But I find it interesting that when they got there to this town, when they got to Bethlehem, now, I can maybe draw this a little bit, but you have the Mediterranean Sea here, and you have make sure I call these places the correct things. So you have the Sea of Galilee here, and the Dead Sea here. And we have somewhere over here in the east where we have the men in the west. I get confused. This is the east. Have the men in the east, and they come over. And we have Bethlehem. We have Jerusalem and Bethlehem right here. So these men, however much distance they travel, they come over here to Jerusalem, and they said, "Where is the king that is born?" And he came over here to where these locals were. And of course, Herod, he's in Jerusalem, and this has him worried. He's saying, I'm not sure. So he pulls together the scribes and the Pharisees, and it's interesting that they were able to go back. They knew the prophecies. And if you go back to Micah chapter 5, that's where they found this. Micah chapter 5, and it says, "But in the end, but thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little amongst the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come forth unto me, that is, to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth has been from old and from everlasting." So these men in Jerusalem knew, the scribes and the chief priests knew exactly where the king was going to be born, and they were so close to it, and yet in the end we have these men being told, well, it's supposed to happen here, but in essence, figure it out. Go see for yourselves. And none of these men that knew exactly where it was going to be even bothered figuring out where it was going to go, where the king was, or whether what these men had said about the king being born, whether that was even true. But these men unashamedly kept up the search. These men continued on without the locals. They didn't say, well, but apparently there was some disappointment when they got to Jerusalem and they realized there was no king there. Apparently there was a little disappointment because it says that they continued on, and then they saw the star again, and the star led them, and it says they followed the star with great joy. And they saw the star in verse 10. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy, because I think they kind of felt hopeless. You know, in this little town of Bethlehem, there was probably more than one baby. And so they were envisioning in their mind, maybe somebody will tell us where this king is. And they get close to where they were supposed to go, and everyone says, well, yeah, in Bethlehem, Judah is where the baby is. But no, we don't know. Go figure it out. And so they continued going, and they said, well, we'll keep going to Bethlehem and this star. And they were glad, because how else do we know, but the star led them right to where Jesus was. God blessed their efforts as they set out in faith to search for that king. God was there, and he showed them exactly where to go. And then we have them, when you get there, we have them worshiping this king, this child. Now picture these wise men, these full-grown wise men, distinguished, known for their wisdom, coming into this little town, and the star stopped, and they realized which place it was when they went in, knocked on the door, I don't know, and went in, and here's this baby. And now picture full-grown, wise, distinguished men walking into a room, and there's a young mother and a baby there. And they look at that young child, and it says they kneeled down and worshiped him. Kneeled down and worshiped. These distinguished men, these men of prestige, these men that were known for wisdom, came in and they worshiped that king. They worshiped that child, realizing that he was king. They were convinced that this Christ child was king. And they realized his significance and their own insignificance in his presence. The fifth thing I see here, and that is they presented gifts to this king. So when we have this child, we have the mother, and we have them bowing down worship, and then they get up, and then they say, well, we have gifts for this king, and they give him gold, frankincense, and myrrh, it says, which I believe would have been expensive gifts. And if you ever gave a gift to someone, you generally try to get something they can use. And I picture this infant laying there, maybe crying, maybe hungry, maybe whatever, and they pull out their gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they give it to this baby, and it would seem in our mind and possibly in Mary's mind, what good is this? But they were gifts fit for a king, and these men understood that's who he was. And I also wondered when I read this story, of course, I didn't read the next couple of verses where the parents were told to go to Egypt, and I wondered if this was God's way of providing financially for their journey in Egypt. We don't ever read that Jesus used the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. He didn't really need a lot. God provided him with what he needed. And I wondered if these gifts that the wise men brought was just God's providential care for Mary and Joseph. Possibly it was. Well, then the sixth thing I see here, and that is that these men, having come, made to their destination, they worshiped the king, gave him their gifts, and then God wasn't finished talking to him yet. He told him in a dream, he said, now don't you go back to where you came from, you go a different way. And these men, I don't know what their thoughts were, but they listened to that. I had to think about, these men, they were there, they worshiped the king, they gave him their gifts, and I'm sure it probably crossed their mind, because maybe it would cross my mind. Maybe that's the only reason I figured it crossed their mind. But it might have crossed their mind. And I'm there again, that if we would go back to the king and tell him, we'll tell you where he is if you give us a certain amount of money. They could have maybe got back a little bit of what they gave. But they were willing to go home a different way. And I don't know how the different way was. I don't know if it's just avoiding that town. I don't know if they went around the bottom of the Dead Sea the other way. I don't know if they added on to their journey or whatever. But when they got to the end of what they wanted to do, God says, now go home a different way. And so it wasn't a matter of just repeat. We know exactly the territory because this way we came. They went home a different way. So now this morning, the question I have for us, each one of us here, and that is, if you would have been in the land of the in the land in the east, and you would have seen a star, you knew there was a king that was born, would have you made the same choice as the wise men? And would have you been one of them, would have I been one of them that would have got up and said, yes, I'm going to follow the star because there's a king that is born and I want to worship him? And I think this morning, sitting here in this congregation, we would want to say, yes, we would do that. That's what we want to do. We want to go worship the Christ child with the wise men. For the remainder of the time, I'd like to think about what steps are necessary today for us to prepare to meet him, whether it be at his second coming or whether it is through a heart issue we have this week and we're taken from this life through a heart attack or whatever else could come over us. What does it take to be prepared? Well, the first thing I have here, and that is that we must be convinced that Jesus is King of Kings. We must be convinced of that, because unless we're convinced that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, we will have no desire, we will have no reason to prepare ourselves to meet him. If these wise men that were from the east had not believed that this baby that was born was King of Kings, they never would have left their country and come to see him. It had been too much work, it had been too much at stake, and they wouldn't have done it. But they were convinced. It doesn't matter this morning what your race is, doesn't matter your intelligence, doesn't matter your financial status, doesn't matter who your parents are, doesn't matter anything. But Jesus is coming again, and if we're fully convinced that he is coming again, then it will affect how we live. Romans 14, verse 12 says, so then every one of us will give account of himself to God. And unless we believe that, unless we believe that Jesus is coming again, unless we believe that someday we will give an account of ourselves to God, we won't make the wise men decision. The second thing I have here, and that is we must unashamedly seek him and serve him, even if we need to do it alone. I'm not sure if the wise men were making the popular move. We don't know. Maybe everyone in that country did. Maybe it was only a few of the wise men that made that move. But this morning, we can't be convinced. We must be convinced that it is important to seek and to serve God, even if it's not the popular move. Even if it's not the end thing. And I'm concerned this morning, and I'm just going to put this out there, and I'm concerned this morning that the importance of living a dedicated life, now hear me out, I'm concerned this morning that the importance of living a dedicated life and serving Christ is taking second place. To fitting in with the culture we find ourselves in. And I'm not saying that, I did say that. Is it possible that we want to fit in so much to a certain culture, to with a certain culture, that we're unwilling, or that serving Christ and being dedicated to following him is second place after we fit in? Is it possible? If the wise men waited till it was the popular thing to do, would have they been the first to worship? It seems like they were the first ones that came after Jesus' birth. Perhaps the shepherds, it doesn't say in Luke chapter 2, it talks about the shepherds coming. But we have the wise men came and they bowed down and they worshiped. It seemed like they were the first. The third thing I have here, and that is with more knowledge comes more accountability. Luke chapter 12, we have these words of Jesus. Luke chapter 12, and we have in verse 47 and 48, and that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given of him shall much required of him shall be much required. And to whom man hath committed much, of him they shall ask the more. The chief priests and scribes had the answers to the wise man's questions. This is where Jesus would be born. However, they did not join them in the search to find him and honor him as king. And I wondered when I thought about this, and that is it possible? Is it possible? And again, I'm not trying to say it's where it's at, but I'm just here throwing it out. It's something we need to think about. Is it possible that those of us who have been raised in God-fearing homes have been taught the Bible stories from little up? Those of us who had the privilege to read the Bible, attend Bible schools, understand the teaching of Jesus on many issues, perhaps have the answers. The scribes and chief priests had the answers. This is where it's going to be. And yet we're so concerned about fitting in, whether it's in our hairstyles, in our clothing, in our social media use, in our music sessions, in our podcasts and YouTube entertainment, and in our hunting, that we are not truly seeking Jesus. That we are not truly seeking Jesus, and that there could be those that it would be possible that there could be those that would come into our church, inside these walls, that are seeking Jesus. And we could give them all the right answers, but in the end not go along. Is that possible? You see, we can have the answers. It's not that we don't have the answers. We've been taught the word from little up. Now, remember, I had a friend some years ago that was going to a church, and he was telling me about what a blessing it was going to this church and all the good things he was seeing from this church. And several years later, a year or so maybe later, he started to tell me about all the inconsistencies of what he thought he was a part of is not what he now sees. And I thought that's so sad. And my question is this morning, and that is, what people see when they come into a congregation, what they see when they come inside these walls, is that what we are? And would they be surprised if they saw everything that's not seen here this morning? Jesus said this. Well, I'll say this yet, and I think I've said this before, but it seems interesting to me that the farther people get from living a separated lifestyle, the farther people get from living, you can think about this in your own life, people you know, the farther people get from living a separated lifestyle, the more they blend with society. So the less separated, the more they blend with society, the more they talk about Jesus and what he's doing for them. And when in reality, Jesus says, and he says this in Matthew chapter 7, you can turn there if you want. Jesus says exactly this. He says, enter ye in at the straight gate. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way which leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat, because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way that leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. That's Jesus' exact words. And I've been pondering that for the last couple of weeks. Few there be that find it. And I wondered, when we think of that, we think of the society we find ourselves in, okay? And you can start to, and you can think about all the people, and you can think about all the unbelievers and the people that have nothing to do with church, people have nothing to do with God. We have Satan worshipers and all kinds, and you say, there's many of those people. And then you could bring that down a little bit more, and you could start talking about, and I don't want to be judgmental this morning, but you could start talking about some Protestant churches about us that have accepted things that clearly here it says it's not acceptable, and it goes against what God, the Bible teaches, whether it's divorce and remarriage, same-sex marriage, all. What is being accepted, and people tell me about how this stuff is being accepted in churches and how that some people have left, the church has split because of this. Do you think those people read the words of Jesus here and say that, yes, there's a broad way still out there somewhere? Or how do you know whenever the point is that there's groups to get to that Jesus says, narrow is the gate that leadeth to life, and few there be that find it. Does a church know when their church gets to that point? That actually you could have a whole church group of people, and in that church group of people, there's only a few. There's only a few. Is that possible? Is it possible for churches to get to the point where church-going people, out of that church, there's only a few that's on the narrow way? And how would you determine if this church would ever get to that point? I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, in your mind, how would you determine that? You see, if part of being a part of a church and part of following Christ is simply measuring yourself with everybody around you and deciding if they can do it, it's all right with me, it's all right to me, sorry for me as well. Then eventually you have a whole group, and is Jesus saying that there's only a few of this group? And how do you know? Well, Jesus continued with these words, and he says, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and thy name have cast out devils, thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you, depart from me, ye that work iniquity." This morning, what is your life producing? What are you filling your spare time with? What are you filling your life with? Is the entertainment that you're filling your spare time with? And maybe I could ask the young people this. Maybe I should ask the middle-aged people this. Maybe I ask the old people this. Is that good trees producing good fruit? Is that what your life produces in the spare time? Is it evidence of good trees and good fruit, or is it evidence of corrupt trees and evil fruit? I think it's time for some people to do some, and maybe myself as well, do some self-examination. And that is what we watch and what we do with our spare time. And if it's something that we would prefer to have hidden versus something that we prefer to show, is it corrupt? Is it corrupt? Hebrews 4:11-13 talks about that nothing is hid from God. Everything is naked and open. Trust me, you can hide things from the church. You can hide things and you can look right on a Sunday morning, but nothing is hid before Almighty God. It is naked and it's open, and he can see and he sees it all. Doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, but God sees it, and you can't hide it from God. Jesus continued on with the words, and I already read them in verses 22 to 23. And I'm going to say this way. I think he said this to those who looked right most of the time, to those who talked right most of the time, to those who were part of a Bible-believing church. He said, "I don't know you." And why didn't Jesus know those people? Was it because that they were out there somewhere and didn't even believe in God, and they were Satan worshipers and all? No, it says these people are saying, many will say to me, "Have we not prophesied in thy name?" And Jesus simply says, "I don't know you, because while you were doing these things, while you were prophesying in my name, while you were casting out devils, while you were doing many wonderful works, while you were looking right and talking right, there was evil in your life that you were hiding. And that's what I saw. All that other stuff didn't amount to anything if it wasn't a complete." And that's what sealed their destiny. And Jesus is saying, around you were those that were seeking the truth, and you had the answers, and they went on alone and found it without you. One thing we can be convinced of this morning, story of the wise men in our day to day, and that is those that truly seek the Lord will be led of him. We had to picture them wise men. Even though the locals had nothing to do with finding Jesus, they searched and they found Jesus. God led them to their Savior. Fourth thing I have here, and that is we must be worshiping the King. These men, of course, knelt down and worshiped. They left everything else behind, however many miles to travel, and they worshiped. And my question this morning here, are you worshiping? Here are you worshiping. Are you worshiping Christ, the King?
fifth thing I have here, and that is we must lay up treasures in heaven. Jesus says in Matthew 6:19-21, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through nor steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. There are things that we have in this life that are valuable to us, but they don't have eternal value, you see. And those men, when they handed those gifts over, they handed gifts to a child that it didn't seem like it was a very smart move. But they were laying up treasures, you see. Am I committed, are we committed this morning to serving and investing in opportunities that don't offer an immediate reward? I don't believe those men got any reward immediately from Jesus for offering them gifts to him. But I believe there was a reward later. How many service opportunities will we neglect? How many service opportunities will we grab hold of? They don't offer a lot of value today, but are laying up treasures in heaven. And then lastly, sixthly, and that is we must continue to follow God's leading through all of life. These men, as we mentioned, they made it. And sometimes in life we have our, life has its highs and its lows, just the way it is. And sometimes we feel like, now we did our good deed for the day, you know. We don't know if you ever had that feeling or not, but you do something, it's a wrong feeling, a wrong motive. But like, I did my good deed for the day, or did my good deed for the week or the month or the year, whatever, you know, maybe it's something really big. It's like, well, I got it figured out now. I did my deed for the day. And then, or maybe you're facing some struggles and some trials, and things started to smooth out, and you started finding joy and submission. You think, well, Lord, now I'm satisfied with where you have me in life, and now I'm good to go. And then something else comes, and it's like, again, well, that's where these men were. They had made it to their destination. They had made it to their goal. They had found what they were hunting for, and they were ready just to go back home. And then they said, we'll go back a different way. That's the God that we serve. And if we're committed to following Christ, if we're committed to being prepared to meet him in eternity, we must be prepared to follow him throughout all of life, even when life gets easy and we can't relax and say, well, now we don't have to listen anymore, because God, he may have more plans for us, and he may have a different direction for us to go home than we thought. And are we willing to follow him? Are we committed to following him throughout the remainder of life? And then there's another little part of the story that I didn't mention before, and I'm just mentioning here in closing, and that is as I read that story, did it seem fair to all those other children? You know, Herod got upset. We can read there in the next couple of verses about how Herod got upset. The men tricked him, and he figured out exactly when that star should have appeared, and he did some calculations and says, well, we kill all the children 2 years young and 2 years old and younger under, then we'll make sure we get rid of this child. And God had provided a way for Joseph and Mary and Jesus to escape that. But there was many, many, many innocent children that were killed and destroyed at the hands of evil men. And sometimes we in today's world, we wonder, why do evil men have power to do these kind of tragic things? And we don't understand that. We'll never understand that. And those, I'm sure Joseph and Mary probably had to work through some of those thoughts. I don't know if the wise men ever heard about that or not, but think about the amount of children that were born, the amount of children that were killed, the amount of families that were torn apart because of some ruthless, evil man. But God allowed it. We can't be convinced this morning that by following Christ, that life's always going to be easy. The evil man's never going to have any power to harm. That's not the God that we serve. That wasn't the God that was in Matthew chapter 2, when Jesus came. That wasn't the God, and we serve the same God today. But my question to you this morning, and that is, are you committed? Am I committed to serving and to making the choice of those wise men that I'm gonna seek out and I'm gonna serve Jesus Christ even if I'm unpopular? Few there be that find him. This week, as we remember the birth of Christ, and the joy this brings to many people. Let's remember his second coming. Let's think about it. If we aren't ready for Christmas, it doesn't matter. But it does matter if we aren't ready for meeting him again. May we be committed to serving him in such a way that we will be found watching and ready, anticipating and preparing for his second coming. And let's join those who are committed to serving and following him so that we can spend eternity with him. You can kneel for prayer.